Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back to The Alex Jones Show here on InfoWars Sunday Night Live. I'm your guest host, Royce White. I'm in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we're going to try and walk through some of these issues point by point. And we're going to get real meticulous with the detail, a little bit of nuance, because that's where the devil plays his dirtiest tricks. And again, it goes without saying. And, you know, people are saying, you know, I thought that what Dan Bongino said and what he's doing and what some of these other influencers are doing, it's blatantly obvious to me anyway. It doesn't look genuine. And I think I can say, because, you know, I'm on neither side. Let's talk about the issues. I'm in Minnesota. This is the belly of the beast. Minnesota's type of place where in our politics, they steal your money, they demand your vote, and then they give you gay bathhouses for reciprocity. So, I mean, we're neck deep in the belly of the beast and just the eye of the storm in terms of Minnesota. And it goes without saying, I don't see it as coincidence that the Minnesota fraud becomes the buried lead, you know, is on page 7 now. So, but I think I'm a voice of reason. I got to say, it started weeks back, and I told General Flynn, I had a conversation with General Flynn, who endorsed me recently to run for U.S. Senate, and I only know General Flynn from being a courageous man who stood against the deep state. As best as I can tell, he's been adamantly against the deep state and in favor of the president, breaking the deep state, you know, to his viewpoint. I was talking to General Flynn, and I asked him a question. I said, what, you know, ever since you endorsed me, every once in a while I get a person who says, you're a part of the Flynn Network. I said, what the hell is the Flynn Network? Sounds like a mafia or something. I don't even know what you're talking about. I've only spoken to General Flynn a handful of times, and we are mostly in alignment on most of the issues like fifth generation warfare and so on and so forth. But the point is, I saw this thread pop up a few weeks back, and it included, you know, General Flynn and Bannon and Candace and Tucker, and, you know, they're all Duganists, and, you know, they're Catholics, and the Catholic Church isn't real, and Catholicism isn't Christianity, and, you know, they hate the Jews, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just thinking to myself, this doesn't look organic. It just doesn't look organic to me. You can't tell me it's organic. And if it is, then we have a bigger crisis than we have an even bigger crisis. If it's actually organic, if people are really in that place in their mind naturally and organically, we have a bigger problem even still. So, my point being is, I don't like what Dan Bongino did. It's goofy. He's goofy. And a lot of these people are goofy. I'm just going to tell you. For me, as a, you know, a type A sort of alpha male, you know, fighter, you know, came through the grind of becoming a professional athlete, which is like, you got to be a little psychotic, but you certainly have to be disciplined and committed. And you got to be willing to put blood, sweat, and tears into the endeavor you're trying to accomplish. And you got to be kind of twisted, like nothing else matters. I'm doing 1,000 push-ups a night because I want to be stronger than any opponent I may come up against on the court. There's a little bit of an obsessiveness to it, but I think that's true of many, many successful people across many domains. As a dude, you know, we say, you know, is he a dude? Is he a guy or not? You know, a lot of these people are goofy to me. I'm just going to tell you. And you can say, oh, Royce, who are you to say, hey, and there's a difference between real life and the internet. There's a significant difference between real life and the internet. And in real life, a lot of these guys just aren't real dudes. I'm just saying. You know, you make a comment like he made about Alex. You say, you know, Alex Jones is a liar and whatnot. And then he says, you know, he told me to lie on the show. And I just went along with it because, hey, that's what the audience wanted to hear. It's like, red flags. Wait, what did you say, dude? did you just say that Alex Jones asked you to lie and you went along with it anyway? That's more of an indictment of you than it is of him by a country mile, actually. Especially when you're now coming back making the claim that he's a liar writ large. Just ridiculous. Some of these things are, absolutely ridiculous, like Epstein killing himself. And even if he did, there are all kind of looming questions about how he was able to. I mean, if you're in the psych ward or where you're on psych watch, whatever the circumstances were, and you got that picture there with all the jumpsuits, I don't even know if that's real anymore. Maybe it was AI. Who knows what was baked into this file? Who knows? Who knows? But we do know that William Barr's father was one of Jeffrey Epstein's first employers, and he died under Attorney General William Barr's watch. And even that in and of itself is quite conspicuous looking at the details. But hey, you know, Epstein's just a distraction, right? I mean, why even talk about it anymore? There's nothing to it. There's nothing to it. It's just a distraction. Okay, fine. If you say so, Dan and all the others. Cool. But let's try and stay grounded in reality. The American people don't take it as a hoax. They don't regard it. And I'm talking about people on both sides of the aisle. It's quite obvious that the American people are not settled on Jeffrey Epstein, nor should they be. And it's not so much about Jeffrey Epstein individually anymore, as much as it's about the connective tissue of an international pedophile ring. And people are right not to let it go without good answers and clarity. And maybe there's a lot of misinformation or disinformation in the Epstein files. I'm not saying that's not possible. What I'm saying is you can't look at people who ask prudent questions about an international pedophile and what appears to be satanic sex ring, trafficking, human trafficking, and go, well, why are you guys still worried about this? People are worried about it because it's worrisome. It's really worrisome that that's going on, and the level of people in power implicated. Okay, let's just say all of that stuff is fake. Let's just say, for argument's sake, all of that stuff is fake. We still have the issue of this movement and what this movement actually stands for. What's the point of it? What's the goal? How did it find success? What was the coalition based on? You know, how'd you get an RFK Jr. and a Tulsi Gabbard and a Royce White and whoever else up and down the line, people who don't come from the conventional pipeline of politics? You know, he didn't graduate from the Ivy League. It didn't come from the country club. Dad wasn't a lawyer or an attorney who did a little work for the Democrats too, but he's a fiscal conservative. You know, how did we find this coalition of new people all across the country? New people all across the country, like Angie Stan King. You know, where did we find this coalition? How did we find this coalition? What is it that people were really fighting against? What was the intuition? The intuition was, and I'll say this to kick the show off this evening, the intuition was there is a corruption that has seeped into the deepest crevices of this government. There is a metastasization of wickedness and corruption and secrecy that we all are right to find repugnant. Like President JFK once said, the very word secrecy is repugnant. Now, JFK had his own set of secrets. You know, he was a bachelor, as the record reads. I don't know. I wasn't there. But as the record reads, he's quite the ladies' man. Okay, most type A alpha males are ladies' men. Yeah, and JFK was certainly a prolific individual. He just spoke so eloquent. It's almost like hearken to our founding fathers. People don't even talk like that anymore. He was a brilliant man, to say the least, but he said some things that even transcended his own political superstardom, his own political celebrity. There were some things he said that will stand the test of time, and I think this is one of them. The very word secrecy is repugnant. Well, I think that's what the impulse of the coalition in 2024 was. We're tired of all the secrets. We're tired of the secrets. We're tired of the lies. We're tired of this scientific, managerial, academic elite ruling over us. Rules for thee, not for me. And lying to the people. People had a belly full of it. President Trump, who should have all of our respect because, and simply because, the man has marshaled the movement for 10 years, and it's been on his back with plenty of help, but it's been on his back. And I just want to say, I see the thing from both sides. Let me throw this theory out there. See what sticks. It's you could make an argument that President Trump's duty is to, has always been to, that the beating heart of the MAGA movement is to destroy, to break the rules-based order, implemented, created, theorized, implemented by Henry Kissinger and all of his acolytes there on the international stage. The rules-based order, the post-World War II democratic liberal order, also known as the international rules-based order, shorthand the rules-based order. You could make a significant, and I think an argument with perfect utility, that President Trump's duty, his divine appointment, is to break the rules-based order. You could make a strong argument that what we're doing there right in the Middle East right now is breaking the rules-based order. You could make the argument. And I'll just lay it out. You control the Strait of Hormuz. Like I said earlier, the game is never finished in politics, so it's always about what happens next, what the next decision is. And people's next decisions are very important and consequential. They shape, they have the ability to shape the past. It's like, well, you're vindicated if you choose these things, in a way. So we'll see what President Trump decides. But to blockade the blockade says one thing. We're escalating. And escalation in this, once we've already crossed into the fog of war, escalation in this sense does seem to put a strain on the rules-based order. And he could even take it a step further, because if he was to tell all the Southeast Asian countries, including China, nobody gets oil except through the United States, oh, that petrodollar that Henry Kissinger, who was a Marxist and a Zionist, put into place back in the 70s, is all but finished. Toast. And to destroy the petrodollar, to break the petrodollar, to break America's dependency on the Middle East and oil, but also the interconnectivity of all the other nations who are dependent on the Middle East for oil, would be a very significant blow to the international rules-based order, without a doubt. Now, I don't know how it all plays out. I could see a scenario, and I said this many weeks ago, I could see a scenario where America comes out on top. I could see a scenario where we decide we're going to take the Strait of Hormuz and we're going to couple that with Venezuela and then a little bit of Canada and America's own oil production. And we're going to tell the Southeast Asian countries, you have to buy oil from America. That's it. Now, the question then becomes, does China let that slide? Because there's always this boogeyman hiding in the shadows for you know, 10, 20 years, and I was like, well, what's China going to do? If they really want to fight us, we can't win. If they really want to, they got hypersonic missiles. They could strike us in the night from, you know, land launches in mainland China. Supersonic, hypersonic missile goes, you know, the speed of light around the globe. We couldn't even detect it. Oh, my goodness, the Chinese are coming, and they are coming, but not in the way you think. Are the Chinese going to go? I mean, this is the exact pretext of World War II, by the way. We had an oil embargo or an embargo on Japan, and Japan said, no, wait a second. Uh-uh. That's too far. We're going right now. The question is, will China do the same thing? And we have put them in that position already. What we've done here in the Middle East and with blockading the blockade, which is already a strategic move. You know, some pieces are put in place. Some pieces fall into place. The pieces have been pushed into place now to tell China it's on. You're going to have to buy oil from us. Either you go now, or you'd be subjected to Western dominance for the foreseeable future. I mean, Belt and Road, if America controls all the oil, that would be the Belt to Ass initiative. That would be the American Western civil Westphalian Belt to Ass initiative, and I got to say I like it. I like it. I like it because China wouldn't even be 1/100th of what they are today without the American working class. Most of that is on our own elites who sold us out. But nonetheless, it's still true. Does China go or not? That's a question we'll have to watch play out. All that being said, I could look at the geopolitics and come up with 1,000 scenarios now that we're in the war, what we could do to have a positive outcome for the American people. And obviously, that's economic. I mean, it's got to be, there's got to be an economic lens to what, and maybe President Trump is that smart. Maybe President, and you know what? I thought about this the other day. Everybody's like, oh, he's doing Bibi's bid and he's doing Israel bid. And maybe in his head, I don't know, I wasn't a part of the intelligence briefings and so on and so forth. And it certainly does seem that Israel has way too much influence in this country. I mean, down to the grassroots level where a candidate like myself here in Minnesota is called anti-Semitic, and the entire, well, not the entire, but a significant portion of the Bush wing in the party uses all their influence to get 200,000 Minnesota Republicans to vote for President Trump, but not Royce White. Why? He said the bad guys won World War II. I'll talk about that on the other in the other block because it's kind of related to what I'm saying today. Rules-based order, World War II, the bad guys won. I think President Trump agrees with me. In a way, he agrees that this rules-based order, kind of the bedrock of is the petrodollar, right? All of the interconnected markets and energy and oil right at the beating heart of that network, that ecosystem. He's saying, we'll blow the whole thing to hell. No. NATO, Europe, all these. You guys want to pretend like America has to be locked and chained to this real politic. And he is changing the real politics. Whether you agree with it or not, and certainly I think the timing of the war is questionable at best, and severely ill-timed, you know, at the worst, and maliciously timed by people who may be advising the president. But you can't say that there's not strain on the rules-based order by what's going on if we continue to apply the pressure. All oil runs through the United States of America. We're going to blockade the blockade. Nothing's going in or out without America's say-so. It's pretty gangster. It's pretty gangster. I'm not going to lie. It's gangster, and it's you know, at some point it was going to come to this. And people have to understand, as much as we don't want new wars or forever wars, there is going to be a fight. I mean, there is no signal from humanity and the superpowers that a fight isn't on the horizon. The question is, how big of a fight? You know, is it going to be asymmetric? Is it going to be biological? Is it going to be informational? Is it going to be kinetic? I mean, that's kind of the choices that we have, and we're starting to get into the kinetic phase of the Third World War, which is all just really one war. It's like World War I, World War II, the Cold War, the Gulf War, it's the World War III. No, it's all one war. It's just been one continuous war with brief pauses in between relative to the charnel house of human history. Will China negotiate? I mean, that's what it's going to come down to here. And I think they will. And I think where China catches the car, before I go there, let me say this. I could come up with 1,000 scenarios where we somehow end in an advantage position, barring some key decisions. But I still think Lindsey Graham's a fruitcake. I still think Mark Levin is obnoxious and not nearly as intelligent as people give him credit for. You know, I still think Randy Fine and a bunch of these other Israel firsters and even Bibi himself, I think all of these people are not honest. They're not even remotely honest. We shouldn't trust them. And if, you know, even if we were dragged into this war by them, or if we were, you know, if we were dragged into this war by them, we could come out on top in some way and still say with good, very definitively, we don't trust these people. We don't like them. We don't trust them. We don't believe in them. We don't believe in their orientation of politics here in America, let alone geopolitics. We don't like these people. We don't trust these people. I think they're goofy. I'm just going to tell you guys, I think they're all goofy. Hey, maybe I'm in the next Truth Social post. I hope not. The president, I support you, and I want to be helpful. And I'm in the street. I mean, I'm at that grassroots level running a statewide campaign, and I can hear what people are saying. And I was at a convention here in Congressional District 1, represented by Finstad, Brad Finstad, Congressman Finstad. And he won his endorsement on a post with flying colors. But in the room, when certain resolutions came up, and there was one that was very controversial, to say the least, there was one where a resolution was made to enter into the platform, the party platform, whether or not Israel has a right to exist. And there were a bunch of people who both clapped, who got up and spoke and clapped in opposition to that resolution. And I thought it was a very even-handed reason they gave. They said, hey, we can hold this position that Israel has the right to exist. That doesn't mean it needs to become a part of our party's platform. I thought to myself, I'm standing there watching, I'm going, wow. I mean, I thought it was going to be more, contentious than that, but it's a very reasonable explanation. It's like, hey, we can love Israel, we can like Israel, we could even find a scenario where we support Israel or continue to support Israel, even if we continue to support them in the capacity that we have in the past. But that doesn't mean we have to hitch our wagon in our party's sort of constitution and bylaws. That's a signal. The signal is people are now starting to refine the ideas and the rationality around the ideological fundamentals. It's like, what does it mean to be a country? What does it mean to be a party? Don't like Lindsey Graham. Nobody's going to get me to like Lindsey Graham. He doesn't even have my respect on face value. Like, he doesn't even pass the man sniff test. He doesn't. I'm just keeping it real with you guys. Come on, guys. What are we talking about? Seriously? Is this even a real thing? I sometimes wake up and I go, man, am I living in the Truman Show or what? How is this guy even a United States senator? Seriously. He doesn't even pass the eye test. And it's a lot of these guys. I'm just going to tell you. I mean, if we want that Pax Americana, we want to be a global dollar empire, a badass global dollar empire, I think we need some better representatives. I'm just saying. I mean, 93 retention rate. We have a 93 incumbent retention rate going up, increasing by 1% since 2020 every year. And 2020 was 93, and 2022 was 94, and 2024 was 95. We're working our way up to 100% incumbent retention. And then everybody wants to complain like the country has the same fruitcakes. Every time, every election is like, which fruitcake we going to vote back in this time, guys? I'm just saying, I'm never going to be on board with Lindsey Graham. He's a warmongering neocon, and I think he's Amy Klobuchar's CIA handler, if I'm being honest. But hey, don't shoot. I mean, I'm just a dumb Negro from the neighborhood. You're watching the Alex Jones Show here on Sunday Night Live, InfoWars. I'm in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Stay tuned. We'll be right back on the other side. We're talking more rules-based order and the many scenarios that could play out here. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know the power of turmeric, but have you felt it? Have you tried the ultimate turmeric gummies, the delicious way to harness the ancient power of golden turmeric, supercharged with ginger root and black pepper for maximum impact? Each gummy delivers 125 milligrams of premium turmeric extract packed with curcumin, the clinically studied compound shown to support healthy inflammation response, ease everyday aches, and promote joint comfort so you can move through life with ease. We added real ginger root, trusted for centuries to calm digestion and soothe the stomach, plus a precise dose of black pepper extract with pepperine, proven to boost curcumin absorption by up to 2,000%. That means more of the good stuff actually gets where your body needs it. No capsules, no bitter aftertaste, just one tasty tropical-flavored gummy a day, or two if you're feeling extra, to help you feel lighter, looser, and more energized. Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, ancient wisdom meets modern science in the best-tasting form possible. Grab yours today and start feeling the ultimate difference in health. With Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, inflammation doesn't stand a chance. Get yours today at thealexjonesstore.com.